Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our monthly managed care update call, joined by our friends at Iowa Total Care this morning on June 14th. We'll get started here by running through a few informational letters that have been released over the last month that would impact members of IHCA, ICAL, and Iowa Center for Home Care. And then we'll jump into our pre-submitted questions. We had three of those that were submitted by some members ahead of time, and then we can run through the chat and see if there's any follow-ups in there. So to get started on the informational letters this morning, just a few that we wanted to point out. Info letter 2450 is an info letter about the PHE unwind and training for providers. You know, this really goes into or went into re-enrollment. I just wanted to touch on that. Although the training has passed, there's likely a recording of that available, but it was on re-enrollment and background checks for all Iowa Medicaid providers that you would need to or want to go through after the public health emergency ended. Another info letter I wanted to touch on here as well is info letter 2462. Again, this is another info letter about the public health emergency unwind and the provider enrollment renewal. And so there is our forms in this info letter. Again, it's info letter 2462 that you would need to fill out if you are wanting to re-enroll or if you haven't re-enrolled in a while and are due, you'd want to complete those application forms to ensure that you can retain your Medicaid provider status. And so we've ran that in the bulletin a few times now, I think. You can also reach out. There's an IME provider enrollment email address that you can check and see if you are due or needing to re-enroll. It's also possible that you could have just followed your normal timeline even during COVID and continued that enrollment process. But again, that's info letter 2462 to ensure that you can maintain Medicaid provider status. We have a couple other info letters in here. One that I want to also touch on is info letter 2457. That is called Telehealth Flexibilities Following the PHE. And so while there were many flexibilities granted during the public health emergency on telehealth, not all of them are going to be retained going forward. Actually, many services are not being retained going forward, but there is still a slew or a list of provider or of telehealth options that will remain available after the PHE. And so on that website or in that info letter is a PHE unwind website. It also gives lists of services that will continue to remain available and services that will not continue to remain available. And they have the billing codes that you would be using to check that out. So I would make sure that you look into that. I do know the last time that we looked or right when that info letter was released, which was June 2nd, the list had not been updated to include some of the home health telehealth codes that are being allowed. If I'm remembering correctly, I think that the codes that are allowed is PT, OT, and social worker visits would or could be allowed to be provided through telehealth if they are approved services by your managed care plan or you have an authorization to provide those services. So those were the three that were relayed to us from the department. I had not seen those updated on the website's posted lists yet, but that's a website that I would monitor. We continue to monitor here to make sure that services are continuing to be provided through telehealth. And we are continuing to advocate for additional services to be included on that list as well. And then I do have another, at least one more I wanted to touch on. And actually it was just released today. I don't know how many ID or brain injury waiver providers that we have. I know most of our home health members service the elderly waiver, but there likely are some that help with brain injury or intellectual disabilities. There was an info letter that came out yesterday. It's ARPA, HCBS Housing Infrastructure Grant. And again, I don't know how much you all get into this, but it's grant dollars to try to improve access to community-based services for those two waivers, as well as HAB and SCL. And so these are grant dollars that would be available if you wanted to purchase a home to house individuals with those waivers, or build or renovate. And so, again, not sure how much this is used by our members. I would guess very little at this point. But I know that members are always obviously looking at other ways to expand business in some cases. And so this obviously could be an opportunity for those that are trying to do that. Again, that's info letter 2477. It's called American Rescue Plan Act HCBS Housing Infrastructure Grant. And that just came out yesterday. Okay. I think that's most of the info letters we wanted to cover today. You know, I'll pause now and see, Jeannie, if you have any updates that you just want to give from Iowa Total Care's perspective, from what's happened over the last month, or just any general updates.
Absolutely, Brian. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your association. I did put in the chat the link to our territory map. As always, we like to share that information, whether we have updates or we don't. But as a matter of fact, we do have some updates. We have had some changes in the provider relations specialist areas of 1 and 2, which is our upper northwest and northeast area. So at this time, you will see that if anyone is affected by those particular areas, that going forward, we would ask that you send any information into our provider relations mailbox. And as soon as we have the opportunity to fill those full-time positions, we will then alert you to that as well. So I wanted to give you that information. today, I also have with me Clayton and Brian from our clinical operations team, which will, they want to have the opportunity to speak to you regarding PRN visits, which is one of the questions that was on your list, Brandon. So if we could start with questions 2 and 3, then I can turn it over to Clayton and Brian.
That sounds good. One question before flipping into those pre-submitted questions. I know oftentimes as there are transition in the provider relations territories, and if a provider is maybe working with their PR rep, and there is a change, what's the best way for those our providers to continue that conversation going and making sure that progress isn't lost?
No progress will be lost whatsoever. We want to make sure the continuity of care. That's why we have the provider relations mailbox indicated on the map, Brandon. And the reason for that is we have these awesome individuals behind the scenes that assist the field-based representatives, and those folks are intricately involved in all of the operations and provider relations, and they are the cog, if you will, of our team and keep those behind the scenes things going. So if your representative has left the organization or moved on within the organization, then by submitting any questions and information, that individual that is responsible for that particular area as well will be able just to jump right in and most likely has already worked on your opportunities that you have previously submitted.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeannie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we will go into our pre-submitted questions now, and I will start with number 2 to allow for that. Our first one that we have here is, it's in regards to when individuals are approved for Medicaid and it goes retroactive you know, back several months. And we see this at least quite a bit on, I'll say quite a bit. We see this regularly on the nursing facility side where someone may be approved for several months back because an application has taken a while to complete. And so when that happens, there tends to be longer wait times on getting those claims paid. I guess from a provider's perspective, in our minds, we would expect once that approval is granted by the department and that eligibility file is transferred over to the MCO, that we would be able to bill for those services pretty quickly, and be reimbursed, you know, at the same or a similar, timing as what our normal billing cycle would run. And so any thoughts or, ways that, you know, we can help or maybe explain that process to us if I'm missing some pieces or if members are missing some pieces in that communication flow?
Absolutely, Brennan. In fact, these particular questions that I will be answering on behalf of our claims team. So Ms. Hillary and Michelle provided me the responses to these. So wanted to share that with you and give credit where credit is due because we are one large team and we collaborate very closely with various teams within ITC. So Hillary shares with me that ITC receives daily files from Iowa Medicaid and loads these files daily. However, there are some cases when we have seen a delay in receiving those particular member eligibility. So when we do receive them, we do initiate a claims project to pay out those claims effectively. The same is true of our client participation updates. We do load changes daily into our system, and then we receive a monthly audit file with all of the member information and changes that our claims reprocessing is based off of when there are changes to client participation. So we do have a QA process to ensure by first we receive the files and then we have the monthly audit information that is also received from our state partner.
Awesome. And then, so if a provider is experiencing, whether it be delays or something like that, I assume that their outreach should go to their PR rep, or is there a period of time that we should be waiting before making that outreach?
Well, that is an awesome question, Brandon, because timing is everything. And, you know, either process isn't a wrong or a right answer. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have lots of opportunities from our state partner side where you can check the information to see if it is updated. If it is updated there, that would probably be your first step to make sure that their member has been updated in the various systems that the state has available. If then you contact us, or you can look up member eligibility, if you don't see that member as being eligible on our portal, then I would recommend that you reach out to your provider relations specialist to see if they can do any additional research. And they may confirm that we do not have that information as well. But the first two steps would probably be for them to look at the system availability that this, you know, that you have from our state partner, and then look on our portal for member eligibility. I would probably say it may take anywhere from, you know, 2 weeks to a month sometimes when we receive that information. As Hillary stated in her response to me, there is sometimes a delay in receiving particular members' eligibility. So for the most part, I would say that within 2 weeks of that being updated with our state partner, you should be able to see it within our system.
Okay. No, that I appreciate the thorough answer. And obviously, you know, we understand that once eligibility is inputted and we do submit claims, you know, while we are normally paid pretty quickly, you know, 10-ish days is what it seems like. There could be instances where it does take longer. And I understand that there are contractual, obligations, by the plan to meet with the state, that exceed the 10 days that providers are accustomed to. So, while being within contractual requirements as the plan, it's just longer than accustomed in some cases. And so there's the balance there that we're trying to handle too.
Absolutely. Yeah. 90% of our claims are paid within 30 days. And as per our contract with our state partner. So I would say that we like to exceed expectations. So we love to hear that 7 to 10 days, but that's not always possible with situations that may arise.
Right. Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And our next question is, I haven't heard this often, but I will say it does come in at every once in a while. And it's again about the denials for, this was a nursing facility submitting this. So this was a denial stating Medicare is primary. And that they have, when that obviously happens, providers need to then dispute it and get it to go through that whole process. Any thoughts on, like I said, I haven't heard this a lot on the nursing home side from you guys in particular, but just any thoughts on a working process that may be in place to ensure that on a nursing home room and board claim to have a Medicare denial doesn't really jive, I guess. And I just don't know what your thoughts are on that.
ITC had a system issue where claims were denying for needing an explanation of benefits, which is probably what you're referring to, Brandon, yep. Or folks have, experienced when the member had other insurance. So we did reprocess these claims as soon as we received the permanent fix within our system and had that updated within our system. So going forward, this should not be an issue. If they are still seeing outstanding claims, please send them to the provider relations representative and we'll sure get those reprocessed for you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will go to our last question, which I know you have a couple others on from your team for that. And this kind of stems from a conversation that we'd had around home health and like access to services and ensuring that care is able to be provided at all times. And so we talked about, and I know if you remember, if you've been around since 2016, PRN visits were always a service that we were able to provide prior to managed care. We would just have those available and could go out and meet needs as they came up without having to use up our off visits. And so I kind of started this conversation with the team and Iowa Total Care here. And it was mentioned that there was a pathway for that. And so I'll turn it over to Iowa Total Care to maybe explain that process and appropriate uses of PRN visits for home health and just, you know, how that should flow. So.
Absolutely. So I'm going to introduce to you Clayton and Brian. They are assisting us with this opportunity today. So Clayton and Brian.
Yeah, can you hear me all right? This is Brian Sanders.
We can, Brian.
All right, good. I've been muted, unmuted, so just trying to figure this out. I know that I attend the town halls and some other talking sessions, and I know that it was brought up on one of the previous, I think, home health listening sessions about needing to go out and see members. The example was like on a Saturday and being concerned that in seeing a member, there would not be a reimbursement or hoping that claim would be paid. So I did a few things. One, I went back and kind of circled back with our UM team and we look and what we were not able to locate any like emergency, need visits, extra visits because of a member's needs that were denied. And so if that's the case, I certainly would like to look at some examples so we can look at that process. But we weren't able to find where we ever denied any of those extra visits. The other thing that came up, though, is that the use of PRN visits. And so what I found is that it has already been a practice of some of the home health providers to build in some PRN visits into their plan of care when they're submitting that. And those have been reviewed and from what I understand, approved. And so what I would say is that when you're seeing members, I know that when I used to be managing members in home health care, you can anticipate, well, first of all, you can't anticipate everything, right? Because there's always something that will go, but you can anticipate, of course, things, you know, members that, you know, have more of an acute illness, have the, you know, the wound packing that always falls out on a Saturday morning, IVs, catheters, et cetera, wound vacs and PCA pumps, you know, you can take your pick, where I think building in 1 to 2 PRN visits right off the bat is a good practice. One, because they're there. You don't have to worry about getting the extra, submitting for an extra authorized PRN visit, and which would, I think, alleviate some administrative functions, which are also things that we hear about that we do talk about and try to address to, first of all, make access quick for our members, but also to do our best to alleviate administrative burden to providers. You know, I'd love to say we can make it perfect, but we want to work on it. So what I would say is that if you are seeing members and you anticipate the need that there's going to be potential for some emergency visits, that you should bake 1 to 2 PRN visits right into your service plan, you know, with some, you know, clinical evidence of, you know, this is why I need it, right? And then if you do have to go out and make additional visits on top of that, then we have been approving those all along. So, like I said, if you find otherwise on those PR1s you've been submitting, please share some examples with me of some members in situations so I can dig into it specifically. But otherwise, we would like to make this a good process for everybody. So, Clayton is our UM expert, and I hope I didn't get myself into too much trouble with him. But are there any questions for me or additional comments, Clayton, that you'd like to share?
No, I think that was great, Brian. Just to add to it a little bit, some of the things, so I'm Clayton Morris. I'm a supervisor of the prior auth team for Iowa Total Care. So there are nurses directly under me who work on these, all of these home health cases and requests that we get. We allow a little extra time for submission of PRN visits. We ask for a timely submission of that request if there are visits that go beyond what's been approved under the plan of care. We ask that they come in no later than 3 weeks from the time of the visit. And they should, what we're looking for, they should include is a doctor's note and or some documentation that just explains why the PRN visit was necessary. But like Brian said, we don't deny those. We don't deny them for retro submission unless they come in really late. I think that's all I've got to add to it, though, Brian.
All right. Well, thank you both. I appreciate the additional details on that. You know, and I know, you know, as we tend to have many home health providers on this call. And so hopefully as a way to help improve, you know, access to services and provide some relief, I guess, or some, it's nice to know that those services are available, or those auths are available for those services, the PRN visits. Hopefully that provides a little bit of peace of mind, I suppose. So we just wanted to at least talk about it here this morning, just to make sure everyone was aware that did exist with Iowa Total Care. So.
Yeah, and Brian, I would say to any of your membership too, that if there are some continued discussions around the delivery of home health services, as one example, it could be for anything, but we're talking about home health right this minute, that I'm open to scheduling a meeting with any or all, happy to come on site, happy to have those conversations. And if there are, you know, things we can look at in the future, you know, I'm happy to have those conversations about what those ideas are, and then if we can make them workable.
Awesome. No, we appreciate that. You guys make yourself available, and we do appreciate that. All right. So I know we only have a few minutes left, so I want to run through some of these questions that are in the chat. One question is in regards to an audit that a facility had. They sent a check, but then had funds recouped for the same residents. they reached out to their rep, but didn't know if there's anyone else that they should be talking to about the audit side, since sometimes there are instances where it's a different branch or a different piece of the company or separate company altogether. So any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, for anyone on this particular call, Brandon, I can't imagine that we have any folks that might have with, you know, iCare or so on and so forth, that but under our purview here, your provider relations specialist serves as your liaison between the various areas within Iowa Total Care, and they will work with our financial areas as well to resolve any of those issues. So they contacted the right area. Good job.
Awesome. Thank you. And then a last question, and Sue, I may have you on mute, but it says home health aid soup visits by an RN are back in play. Iowa Medicaid states those are visits are billable and reimbursable. How should those visits be pre-auth, preferable G code for pre-auth and billing? Question mark.
I can answer that one. So those RN supervisory visits for home health aides should just be built in as a regular G0299 as a nurse visit included in the plan of care. We have been getting those all along, and I think we approve them.
Awesome. Thanks, Clayton.
Yeah.
Okay. That is what I see in the chat for Iowa Total Care. So I appreciate you guys all joining us again this month and, you know, adding the people who need to be on to answer some of the questions. So we appreciate you guys' willingness to always include those folks. So with that, I want to thank you again. Oh, Miriam said mine didn't get answered. I think we just talked about yours, Miriam, about you have the right person that you've reached out to on that audit. So with that being said, thanks again to our team at Iowa Total Care for joining us again this month, and we will chat with you again next month.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon.